Welcome to the Liberated Body Podcast, helping you to more happily inhabit your body with your host, Brooke Thomas.
Welcome to episode 30 of the Liberated Body Podcast. This is Brooke Thomas, and today I'm talking with Dr. Carolyn McMakin, who is the leading authority on frequency-specific microcurrent, otherwise known as FSM. She maintains a clinical practice and participates in research and teaches seminars on the use of FSM in the U.S. and internationally. She is an expert on the subjects of fibromyalgia and chronic pain syndromes and has lectured on these topics at the National Institutes of Health and at numerous other conferences. And her textbook, Frequency-Specific Microcurrent in Pain Management, was recently published by Elsevier. So many moons ago, I actually trained with Dr. McMakin in FSM, and I worked in a holistic pain management practice in Napa, California, as their FSM tech. And I witnessed kind of crazy miracles, especially in regards to neuropathy, shingles, and fibromyalgia. And those of you who are in practice know that the reason why that really stuck with me is that these are things that are particularly treatment resistant. And so it was pretty amazing to see those things get better so rapidly. So I was really blown away. And then as now, it brought up all kinds of questions for me about our bodies as electromagnetic systems. So she and I get into that and how FSM works, of course. We talk a bit about the history of electromagnetic medicine, which is pretty interesting. And we get into a really intriguing research study on reducing inflammation using FSM that had such dramatic results that it put the lab on lockdown for a while, actually, to sort out what the problem was. Kind of interesting. And the effect of FSM on shingles. And Carolyn also shares a lot of her knowledge about fibromyalgia, which is brilliant for teasing out several different causes of fibromyalgia. And the problem with fibromyalgia always being dumped into the same kind of basket when really, as you'll hear, it can emerge from several different roads, even though it winds up all looking like fibromyalgia at the end. I think that's hugely important because this is still a poorly understood condition, particularly in medical communities. So she has a lot of wisdom to share on that. So there's a wealth of knowledge coming up from a perspective that is a little atypical from what we normally inquire about here at Liberated Body. And before we get into it, this isn't medical advice, so don't use it that way. And just a brief announcement that next week there will not be a Liberated Tuesday. I will miss you all very much, but I will be taking the week off to celebrate the holidays with my family and also to kick off the next Liberated Body 30-Day Challenge for the month of January. But do not fear, it's just a one-week hiatus. I have lots of amazing interviews queued up for when I get back. And as to the 30-Day Challenge on Liberated Body, I'll get into that just a little bit more at the end of the episode. And if you're curious, of course, you can always find it on liberatedbody.com. But the nutshell version is that if you wanted to kick off your new year doing what is essentially a movement cleanse with a group of super fun body nerds, the 30-day challenge is where it's at. So it also won't run again until April. So grab the January challenge if you wanted in on that. And that's it for announcements. Without further ado, here is Carolyn. So thank you so much, Carolyn, for talking with all of us today.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So why don't we start by describing or having you describe what frequency-specific microcurrent is?
Frequency-specific microcurrent is really just what it sounds like. It's microamperage current that's delivered with a machine that allows you to have a frequency on each of two channels. And those frequencies intersect in the patient's tissue, and they change the way cells and tissues function, the frequencies do. I got a list of frequencies from an osteopath who bought a practice in 1946 that came with a machine that was made in 1922, and that machine came with a list of frequencies. And I got the list, and we had a microcurrent machine in the office, and we were just sitting around musing one day And Dr. Douglas, who's a chiropractor that worked with this old osteopath, said, you know, I wonder if Harry's frequencies would work on that precision microcurrent. I don't know, we could try it. So in 1995, we tried the frequencies on the machine for the first time. And they're under 1,000 hertz. And they're described on the list. There's one column that was dedicated to conditions, like inflammation was 40 hertz. Chronic inflammation is 284 hertz. Scar tissue is 13 hertz. So we made the assumption, and it proved correct, that the frequency on the list was to neutralize this pathology or this thing that was wrong with the tissue. And then there was a list of tissues. So there was 396 is the frequency for the nerve. I don't mind giving the frequencies out to your listeners because they're all published in a textbook that I published 3 years ago with Elsevier. So frequencies for certain conditions and were combined with frequencies for certain tissues. And then we just observed the effects. First, we found out that if you ran a frequency that was not useful, didn't hurt anything. So that was the first 2 or 3 months when we were using on each other and on my friends and on my kids. And then we took it into the clinic and we found out all clinically what the frequencies did when you use them on patients' tissues. So probably the most dramatic was somebody would come in with rheumatoid arthritis. I had a 19, 20-year-old rheumatoid arthritis patient, and she's now 40. And she would come in with her knee the size of a grapefruit or a cantaloupe. And I'd run the frequency for reducing inflammation in all of the joint parts that we had, the cartilage, the joint capsule, the bone. And her knee would go from the size of a cantaloupe to normal in 45 minutes. Mm. So we just discovered through use what was effective and how it worked. So the first year, we focused on treating myofascial trigger points and muscle pain. That was the first two papers I published. And then the second year, we found out, 1998, we found out how to treat nerve pain. Nerve pain is a nerve that's inflamed. So it's inflammation, remove inflammation from the nerve. So you could treat sciatica and radiculopathies. And then 1999, we found out how to treat the spinal cord. The patients would come in with full body pain. And the only thing that made any sense was, well, it's if their body's all in pain, the only nerve structure that goes from your toes, that carries information from your toes clear up to your neck, is your spinal cord. So we ran the frequency for inflammation in the spinal cord, and those patients got better. 98, we didn't have any luck at all treating diabetic neuropathies. And then I looked up what the pathology was, what the actual cause of diabetic neuropathies was. It doesn't have anything to do with the nerve. It has to do with the blood supply. The blood vessels are inflamed and congested and clogged up. So 99, we started treating the blood vessels in diabetic neuropathy patients, and we were able to not only correct the neuropathy and take away the pain, but heal the wounds as well. So the advantage and the disadvantage is that the frequencies are very, very specific. They do exactly what they are alleged to do, whether that's what you think they're going to be doing or not. So over the last 17 years, we've really figured out that there's very little placebo effect, at least on the part of the practitioner. You can have the best intentions in the world, and if you're not treating the right thing with the right thing, things don't change. Mm. It's fascinating. So like this last year, I had a patient with pelvic pain. She had painful intercourse ever since the delivery of her second child. And so had been unable to have intercourse for a year and a half. And so I did a palpation, and sure enough, her pelvic floor muscles, she said, it's scar tissue from this bad episiotomy. Well, I felt the vaginal tissues, and there wasn't any scarring. There was no keloid. There was no perceptible scarring in her vagina, but that was her idea about where the pain was coming from. What I did find was that her pelvic floor muscles were in spasm. They were just rigid. And so I treated for the muscle, treated to quiet the nerve, figuring maybe the muscles had been traumatized during this traumatic birth. And it softened a little bit. Then I went to the other side and it softened a little bit. By the time I went back to the first side, it was rigid again and exquisitely painful. And during this treatment, she's talking, and I'm using the frequencies for the muscles, and she's talking, and she said, my uterus never had time to heal from the birth of the first child. So her first child was premature. It was very difficult. The baby was in the... So she had her second child 9, 10, 11 months after the first one. So, and the phrase she said two or three times was, my uterus never had time to heal. And I thought, well, I have a frequency for the uterus, and I have a frequency for removing the fact of trauma from the uterus. I wonder if that would do anything, because treating the muscles is not working. So I shifted to the frequency to remove the fact of trauma from the uterus, and her entire pelvic floor got soft. 20 minutes later, she had absolutely no pain, no spasm, no nothing. And it was all from treating the uterus for trauma and restore vitality and remove the inflammation and their frequencies for torn and broken. And so I ran all of that on the uterus, but mostly 20 minutes on the frequency to remove trauma from the uterus, and all of these pelvic floor muscles just disappeared. They just went back completely to normal. And the next night she had absolutely normal and pain-free sex, one treatment, one fix. And this has been almost a year. And we had a communication the other day and she said, yeah, it's still working great. No problem.
That's wonderful. It's amazing.
It's just, and it continually surprises me, because you wouldn't, it's almost not sensible, right? That these people in 1922 somehow discovered frequencies that resonate with particular tissues and that they're correct.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, really? Seriously? I do things all the time that even I don't believe.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, and a lot of what we talk about here at Liberated Body tends to be in the manual and movement therapy fields. And so a lot of the treatments that we're doing in our own practices or that people are seeking out, they're accomplished hands-on or through verbal mm-hmm. lessons. And so this is really a big shift, you know, in how tissue can be affected and that it can be affected by microcurrents. So is there a way, or is there a model that you can use to describe, like, how does the current affect the tissue? Unless that's like overly complex, but.
Well, it's not that bad, at least not to me, but then I live in this world. So you tell me if it makes sense to you.
We've got really nerdy listeners. I think that they'll be fine.
Yay. I love talking to nerds. Nerds rule. I had a patient yesterday that was she's a veterinarian, and we sat there and looked, we read through the section in Guyton, the physiology book that was relevant to her condition. And it's like, oh, geeks just are so much fun. Anyway, so back in the 30s, the medical community decided that drugs and surgery was the way that medicine was going to go. And the whole concept of electromagnetic therapies was shut down in 1934. And it was a big part of medicine up until 1934, from about 1890, 1900. So for almost 40 years. So that we've kind of lost the concept until Becker and Jim Oshman. The body is an electromagnetic system. We think of ourselves as a chemical entity because we know the biochemistry of, you know, how tissues put together and what your hormones look like and all the chicken wire diagrams. But your body, when it functions, is an electromagnetic system. You produce current on your own. You are polarized positive at the spine and the brain and negative out at your fingertips and down at your toes. There is a natural current flow in every tissue, every cell. Cells are semiconductors because of the water molecules that line the cell. Let's say adipose or ceramic, we think of those as insulators. Current does not flow through those well. But water, everybody knows, is a straight conductor. It conducts. Every cell in your body is a semiconductor like a computer chip. So the water molecules flicker and they form in their outside shell of the water molecules a little hole where there's a space for an electron. And that allows for the regulated, controlled flow of not only current, but information. So your brain has chemical signals that we're aware of, but the processing of information in your brain and your nervous system happen by orders of magnitude more quickly. So I want to say 10 times, but it may be more than that. It's orders of magnitude more quickly than is possible by straight chemical conductivity. So you are an electromagnetic system. So the current is physiologic. Microcurrent is millions of an amp. It's the same kind of current that your body produces on its own. And so you can't feel it. And when you use current that's below 500 microamps, it increases ATP production by 500%. So current from 10 to 500 microamps increases ATP production by 500% in rat skin. That study was done in 1982. 2001 and 2002, Seegers reproduced that study, and she too found that current from 10 to 500 microamps increased energy production, ATP production, by 5 times or 500%. It increased waste product removal, it increased amino acid transport, and it did it in living cells, not just rat skin, not just in culture, but it did it in lymphocytes, human lymphocytes. So your body is able to use the current directly to increase energy. So that's one effect. That's just the current. The second effect has been the effect of the frequency. So just unmodulated microcurrent at 0.3 hertz or 0.6 hertz, that's been used since the 70s. People use probes, they'll use adhesive pads. People have used microamperage current for, 40 years? But the addition of the frequencies added a dimension to the treatment that has been extraordinary. So it's as if the current gives your body all of the energy it needs to make the changes that the frequency is telling it to do. There is finally, after 17 years, we have a model for what's actually going on that fits all of the data that we have in the last 17 years. And that is that the frequencies appear to resonate probably with the messenger RNA inside the cell or the cell membrane protein receptors, which are then connected to the DNA and RNA in the cell. And the frequencies resonate with those structures in such a way as to change their function. So we're used to using a key to open up a door lock, and we're used to drugs and even nutrients as operating like a key in a door lock to change cell function. The frequencies operate like a key beeper to open the door lock electromagnetically from 20 feet away. So it's a model that holds up and it accounts for all of the data that we have. So the model came up because these are your people are body workers by and large, right? So you'll appreciate this. I was the patient with an Achilles tendinopathy. So I injured my Achilles in January of some year, 11. And I treated it twice a month, three times a month, with the frequencies for inflammation and chronic inflammation and after a while scarring. And it just kept getting worse. So I was back on a cane and my Achilles was triple the size of normal. It was exquisitely tender. It's really annoying. And we went to a medical meeting, had a booth, and it was during one of the quiet times. And one of our practitioners was working at the booth. And I said, can you try treating this? I haven't gotten any place with it. So she happened to pick the frequency for torn and broken. She said, this just feels yucky, like there's little micro tears in it. I said, well, so she put on the frequency for torn and broken on channel A, 124, and the frequency for the tendon on channel B, 191. And the pain started to go down in the tendon almost immediately, inside of a minute. The gloves that she was using were graphite gloves we used to conduct the current. They got warm. And we sat and talked for an hour because that one frequency combination kept working. By the end of the hour, the tendon was normal size, completely not painful, no pain, normal size, and never needed another treatment. And when you look up the mechanism for tendinopathy, the inflammation and hypertrophy in the tendon come from the fact that there is micro tearing in the tendon that the tenosite cannot repair, let's say, overnight. So the tenosite begins to express the genes for inflammation. And that's why it hurts. It's not of its nature an inflammatory condition. So treating it for inflammation works for 30 minutes, but it doesn't do anything. Mm. And that model has completely rocked my world because, like, you mentioned the fibromyalgia treatment. There is a treatment in a paper that we have where fibromyalgia, people that have full body pain associated with spine trauma, and these are your fibromyalgia patients that are exquisitely tender to touch, light touch makes them sweat. It's probably the most painful of the kinds of fibromyalgia. And the one frequency that takes down that pain is 40 hertz on channel A, reduce inflammation, 10 hertz on channel B, the spinal cord. And when you run that, we have data from an immunochemist at NIH showing that all of the inflammatory cytokines go down by factors of 10 and 20 times in 90 minutes. Mm. People that are familiar with cytokines will tell you that cytokines do not change easily. They do not change quickly at all. They're hard to change. And they change slowly. With FSM, they reduce by factors of 10 and 20 times in 90 minutes. It is unheard of. Mm-hmm. What's interesting is they all stop in the normal range. All of them. They just stopped at 20. None of them went below the normal level. None of them went below 15 or 20. So they all stopped in the normal range. So the original idea that I had was that somehow the frequencies were unwinding the cytokine peptide. That couldn't happen because they stopped in the normal range. So this model where the frequencies change cell signaling and normalize it is probably correct. And we'll be able to test it eventually. But for body workers, it means when the muscles, let's say, every muscle in the right shoulder is tight and tender and has trigger points in it. We've all treated patients like that with your hands. And so we assume that the muscles are the problem, that it's mechanical dysfunction in the shoulder, and we're going to normalize the fascia and deal with the muscle. Well, most of us have also had the experience of doing that and being able to improve that tissue by 10%, 15, 20% in an hour-long bodywork session. When you understand that the C5, C6 nerve roots innervate virtually every muscle in the shoulder, and we treat inflammation in the nerve, and 90% of the muscle tightness, muscle spasm, and almost all of the pain disappears in 15 to 20 minutes. So FSM, the inescapable conclusion is that you run the frequency to reduce inflammation in the nerve. Inflammation in the nerve is what's causing the increased muscle tone and muscle pain. And you correct that dysfunction in the nerve, and the muscles just quiet down. And then treating the muscles easy. So there are a lot of body workers, massage therapists, chiropractors, physical therapists in the U.S. and Ireland and Australia that use FSM in combination with body work. We have some fabric wraps that allow you, let's say, to put a contact around the neck and a contact under the feet, and connect them to the machine, and you run a frequency combination, reduce inflammation in the spinal cord. That takes down a certain amount of muscle tone, a certain amount of pain. You can run frequencies for whatever your fingers find, and it makes it possible to do things with body work that are not possible to do.
Yeah, and you know, it's worth mentioning here that I trained with you many years ago, 2000 and maybe 2001.
Wow.
And I worked at a holistic medical clinic in Napa that had a lot of pain patients, and so I was sort of the person who administered the frequency specific microcurrent. And you know, I mean, I saw it accomplish things that I just couldn't then and cannot now accomplish with my manual therapy practice. You know, you mentioned fibromyalgia from cervical injury, neuropathy, things like that. And just seeing people who are dealing with these debilitating pain conditions that respond to very little get better in this non-invasive, very easy way was really profound. So it's special stuff.
And it continues to improve and shift. I mean, you took the course really back before I got good at teaching it, and before we had discovered a lot of the things that we're using now. So now there in the course, there is a section on the visceral causes of myofascial trigger points and pain.
Interesting.
So I had a patient this week, actually last week, and among his complaints, he had sciatica. And he had shoulder pain that was associated with thing from his neck. But he had this area of exquisite tenderness from about T7. So his mid-thoracics from T7 to about L2. And it was, you would touch him and he would just flinch. And this guy was an athlete. So it was, when he flinched, it was because it really hurt. So there's nothing there, you know, structurally. From T7 to L1 or 2 is among the most stable, hard to injure places in the body. The only thing that's there is the kidneys. So I ran the frequency. So I set him up. We treated the nerve with one machine. I treated the neck and shoulder with another machine. And I hooked a third machine up right over his mid-back and ran the frequencies for kidney stone pain. We didn't have this back when you took the class. We didn't stumble across that combination until 2002. Kidney stone pain, 20 hertz on channel A, 60 hertz on channel B. The muscle was completely non-tender in 10 minutes. I ran it for an hour. When he came back this week, there's a little teeny hint on one side, but that mid-thoracic pain's gone. Never came back. He had kidney stones that he did not suspect. And So the visceral causes, so how do you deal with trigger points in the rectus abdominis that are causing back pain? When the trigger points are caused by inflammation in the small bowel because the patient is eating gluten or milk and they're allergic to it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can treat those tissues, you can treat those trigger points. For body workers, what you can say is the frequency 40 hertz on channel A and 22 hertz on channel B is what takes away the trigger points in the small in the rectus abdominis. In our world, we know that those frequencies are removing inflammation from the small intestine, but can't really make any claims about that because I don't have any proof about it. But what I can say is if you run 40 hertz on channel A and 22 hertz on channel B, the trigger points in the rectus abdominis are going to go away.
Hmm.
And you can do anything you want to the rectus abdominis. You can treat it for hours and you'll make 5 to 10% improvement. You treat inflammation in the small intestine and it just disappears. So that is probably what's changed and refined in the 14 years since you took the class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's been a voyage of discovery that has just been extraordinary.
I'm sure. I saw some amazing things.
Yeah,
yes. I was working really amazing things, like crazy, miraculous things.
And you look at it and you say, really, it worked?
Yeah.
Nah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's one I wanted to ask you a question, kind of backing up a little bit about the differences between current things that people think about. But before I do, I just want to mention, because it's somebody who I worked with when I was doing FSM, and he gave me permission those years ago to share his story at any point. And he was somebody who had a severe, like, was almost decapitated cervical injury and had fibromyalgia from cervical injury. So you know what that means, you know, extreme burning pain in his hands and feet. He had been a park ranger, so he was on disability for years, just miserable stuff. And we did the frequency specific microcurrent and that was it. Like, he got better. He got a home unit and he used it at home. He went back to work as a park ranger in California, woo-hoo! You know, like, where you're doing some pretty heavy duty stuff.
Yeah. Isn't that
cool? It was miraculous. Yeah. I mean, he was one of those people who had just been written off as like, well,
that's it.
Your life's going to be misery forever, you know?
And we had a police officer, same thing. He'd had an accident. He's been a motorcycle police officer. He got hit by a car, broke both his arms. He had four surgeries on his forearms. At the end of the third surgery, he woke up with full body pain. And he had been at OHSU in the fibromyalgia department for 4 years. He was on all sorts of meds. He came in, I treated him with that same protocol that you just described, a 40 and 10. And his pain went from a 7.5 or an 8 down to a 0. He came back 3 days later at a 4 and left at a 0. And he canceled his third appointment. And he came back in a month later and said, I don't need to be treated. I just came in to say thank you. I've spent the last month taking myself off of all of my medications, and my pain level's a 2. And it never recurred.
Mm, that's beautiful.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, it's profound. It's amazing. Giving just, people their lives back is amazing.
That's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
That's what just turns me on about what we do. And I love hearing stories like yours.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Me too. So what I was going to ask, sort of a very basic question, just because I think it's important to differentiate. A lot of people hear about currents and they're going to be thinking about things like a TENS unit, or maybe even they're thinking something like ultrasound, even though. So can you describe how frequency-specific microcurrent differs?
Sure. TENS is milliamps. It's thousandths of an amp. And it's enough to cause muscle contraction. And basically, TENS works by putting so much sensory input from the tingling and the muscle contraction. You put in so much sensory input above the level of the pain generators that that you block or compete with ascending pain signals. So that's how TENS works. Microcurrent. And what's interesting is the three studies, Nokchang in 1982 and Seegers in 2001 and 2002, those three studies all show that current levels between 500 and 1,000 microamps caused ATP production to level out, and current levels above 1,000 microamps actually decrease ATP production. ATP increases by 5 times if the current's between 10 and 500 microamps. So all of the things like Russian stem and interferential and TENS work by creating competition or interference between the with competition or interference with the pain signals that are going up the spinal cord to the brain. Microcurrent works locally by increasing ATP production at least, and then with the frequencies, we actually, I believe, are changing cell signaling. That changes cell function, and ultimately, like when we use the frequencies to dissolve scar tissue, it changes cell structure. We unwind the scar tissue. So the other kinds of current therapies have an effect. It's just a different mechanism. Interferential works by causing so much muscle contraction, it raises endorphins locally and blocks pain. It also causes, movement of lymphatic congestion. So you can reduce lymphatic congestion. Ultrasound just makes things vibrate and heats them up. Mm-hmm. So even when I was a chiropractor, ultrasound never made any, I mean, I still am a chiropractor, but when I practiced as a chiropractor and I worked in somebody else's office and they had an ultrasound, they wanted me to use it. And it's like, I couldn't bring myself to do it. It's like, why would you want to heat anything up? I know there are people that are advocates, but it's never made any sense to me. Mm. So ultrasound just makes the water molecules in your body vibrate and it creates heat, and that would create vasodilation and increase circulation. And it's a completely different mechanism. Microcurrent is approved in the category of TENS by the FDA because it has batteries and because the people that developed it needed a way to get it to market quickly and inexpensively. So they applied for a 510K as if it was a TENS, even though it's not a TENS. To be insurance reimbursable, you just have to have a pain diagnosis. Hmm. So if you're in an insurance-based rather than a cash-based practice, people can bill for microcurrent as a TENS, a tended electrical stim, because it's approved in the category of TENS. The frequencies are not regulated. So there is no FDA regulation about the use of frequencies. It's just not something they regulate. Mm-hmm. So that part's okay. And they could get a little cranky about claims made if I was the one that was making them. But pretty much anybody that's in a private practice can do anything they want. Mm-hmm. And the FDA stays clear as long as you're not putting it on television. Right. It's a different... It's just an entirely different mechanism because the current is physiologic.
Okay. And, you know, going back to some of the conditions that frequently don't respond to things very well and that are treated very well with the microcurrent, shingles is one of the things that I saw a lot of people get remarkably better from, not remarkably better, resolved completely. And you have some good research on that as well.
Well, we finally have a published case report, which is not good research, but at least there's something finally in print. Mm-hmm. The frequency for shingles there's a chapter in the book on it. Frequency for shingles in the acute phase. So the patient has shingles. Let's say they're in pain for a week or two, then the blisters break out. At that point, even in the prodrome or when the blisters first break out for the first 2 weeks or so, you run that frequency. They are out of pain in 10 to 20 minutes. We used to say you had to treat them an hour a day, 3 days in a row. And what we found out was that you can do a single 2-hour treatment. So you set them up. They usually fall asleep because they're finally out of pain. And 2 hours later, it's done. The pain's gone. It never comes back. If they have blisters, the blisters dry up and are gone within 24 to 48 hours. So the case that I published, I was married to David Simons, the Trigger Point Manual textbook author. I was married to David for the last 4 years of his life. And David had a rash on his head. We were on a trip to Mayo Pain meeting. He had a rash on his head that his dermatologist had said was actinic keratosis. And I had a booth at this event. And he came to the booth and he said, "You have got to treat me. This is driving me crazy. And this medicine he gave me to put on this rash isn't helping." So I treated him for actinic keratosis is inflammation in the skin. So I ran the frequencies for inflammation in the skin and it made his pain worse. Well, if somebody has an infection and you reduce inflammation, it's going to make the infection worse. So that's what told me it was shingles instead of actinic keratosis. So he had the shingles in the ophthalmic branch of the fifth cranial nerve. It was on his scalp, down over his eye, down to his ear. The full distribution of the fifth cranial nerve ophthalmic branch was involved. And so I treated him at the booth for an hour. Pain was gone. Didn't come back. We went back to our room that night and he fell asleep and I treated him for 2 hours while he was asleep because shingles in the ophthalmic branch of 5 in an 85-year-old man does not get better. It turns into post-herpetic neuralgia virtually 100% of the time, and it is what they die of or what they die with. Mm-hmm. It is horrible. So we did that in 2007, I think. And in 2010, in Practical Pain Management, I wrote his obituary for that journal in June of 2010, and I asked the editor if he'd like a shingles case to publish, and it was David's. And the reason the case was publishable was the outcome in ophthalmic branch of 5 shingles in an 85-year-old man is so well known that anything that even improves it, much less resolves it in 2 to 4 hours of treatment, is extraordinary. So acute shingles, yes. Post-herpetic neuralgia is not so easy. But acute shingles, if I could get – it's the one thing that I will let even a patient treat a family member for. You can treat strangers in the street. Checker at Safeway. You can treat anybody you want for shingles because it's not like anything else works. The antivirals are incredibly expensive. And they kind of sort of make it better after maybe a week, at which point it might have gotten better on its own anyway. But this is, they're out of pain in 20 minutes and it's gone in 2 hours. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's amazing. And one other research study that was, or this isn't a research study instead of a case study, was about the inflammation, reducing inflammation in mice ears.
Yeah.
And that was pretty clear too.
Yeah. It's extraordinary. It was at the University of Sydney in the Veterinary Science Department. There's a researcher down there, or was a researcher, she's retired now, who had a colony of mice, and her professional career as a veterinary researcher had to do with studying the effects of anti-inflammatory drugs and processes on inflammation in this mouse model. So they paint arachidonic acid on the mouse's ears. That follows a well-known, well-documented inflammatory pathway and does lipoxygenase-mediated inflammation, increases it. And then you do something to the mouse. You give it a drug or you inject it with something, you feed it something, and you see what happens to the inflammation. So Health World was the company down there back in 2000 that was sponsoring the seminars. So they sponsored this research project at University of Sydney. So they took mice. So they did the first group of mice. She painted arachidonic acid on the mouse's ears. The Health World naturopath picked up the mouse with these graphite gloves and ran 40 hertz on channel A and 116 hertz on channel B, which is the frequency for the immune system. And in the first 10 animals, the swelling, so they measured the swelling in the ears as a measure of the research, the swelling went down by 70%. And the researcher shut down the lab, shut down the study. She'd been doing this for 18 years, and in 18 years, she'd never seen any prescription or non-prescription drug that had reduced inflammation by any more than 45%. So anything that did it by 70%, it was suspect. Mm. It's like, there's no earthly way that's working. So she blinded everybody in the lab. She moved the guy who was painting the arachidonic on the acid on the mice's ears. She moved him into one room and closed the door. She moved the people who were measuring the mice in another room and closed the door. And she went in with the guy that was treating the mice, turned the machine away from him so he couldn't see it. And she put in a placebo frequency. And with all of those controls, it still reduced inflammation or reduced the swelling by 62% in 4 minutes. And it was time dependent. So half of the effect was present at 2 minutes. The full effect was present at 4 minutes. Then she did cyclooxygenase mediated inflammation. They paint myristoyl stearate on the mouse's ears. The ears swell up, and you can measure that swelling. So, and that's a Cox mediated pathway. And they ran 40 and 116, and it reduced the inflammation by 30%, which doesn't sound that good, except that that was equivalent to injectable Toradol when it was studied by this same researcher in this same animal model.
Wow.
So that's when we knew that it was time dependent. That was a piece of information we didn't have before that bit of research. So it was, it means basically that FSM we have data that supports it, the use of frequencies and frequency specific microcurrent in every inflammatory condition. So asthma, pancreatitis, cirrhosis, liver enzymes, irritable bowel, Crohn's, ulcerative colitis, anything that is not infected, rheumatoid arthritis, anything that is associated with inflammation, most of the dementias, most of the neurologic conditions that are associated with inflammation. It was an extraordinary breakthrough. And the only unfortunate thing was that she had 20 mice that were in this first group, and the N wasn't big enough to satisfy the critics and the skeptics. And so she wouldn't publish it.
Mm.
So we have this beautiful piece of research. She is completely ethical and objective, and she assures me that it is reproducible, that we could, if we found somebody with a mouse colony and the same sort of expertise, we could reproduce the findings. The cytokine data shows that we can reduce inflammation in the nervous system. So between those two things, any inflammatory process, ovarian cysts, you can feel them shrink.
Mm.
And it's you running the frequency for inflammation in the ovary, and you can feel the ovary if you're trained in that kind of palpation. You can feel the ovary go from the size of a grapefruit to the size of a golf ball or a locot.
Yeah.
In 15, 20 minutes. So that piece of work was just extraordinary. And it's Vivian Reeve was the researcher at University of Sydney, and the naturopath. I can see his face in my head, so of course I can't remember his name. But
well, I'll put that in the show notes too for people who want to look at that okay. piece of research. And just one, circling back a little to fibromyalgia, one other thing about that. When I had trained with you, you sort of differentiated at the time. I don't know if this has changed, but you differentiated different types of fibromyalgia, which I think is so helpful. That they don't all get lumped into the same thing. So can you speak to that a little bit?
Absolutely, because it's been, I've sort of given up lecturing to the fibromyalgia community because they're still looking for one cause. And the patients end up with it's a neuroendocrine pain problem. Patients end up with very similar appearance and difficulties at the end of it, but how they got there. There is one group that's probably 30 to 40% of fibromyalgia patients get there because they have a spine injury, a neck injury, they fell off a horse, they fell off a ladder, they got in an auto accident, they got intubated for surgery, or they bulged a disc at T6 in a martial arts confrontation, and that inflames the spinal cord and that gives them full body pain. And then after you've been in pain for 1 to 2 months, your endocrine system just gives up the ghost and you end up with the endocrine difficulties. But there are patients that don't have that. Their mechanisms are different. So there are patients who get full body pain because they have been exposed to organic chemicals or pesticides. Their liver can't handle the detoxification just because of their genetics. And so the organic chemicals get into the nervous system membranes and change the firing characteristics and create pain. And the pain takes you down this endocrine stress cycle that creates the other symptoms we associate with fibromyalgia. There are some patients where they have fibromyalgia, but what they have is poorly managed menopause. They're estrogen dominant, progesterone deficient. That gives them a sleep disturbance and fatigue. And then they have trigger points in their neck and their low back, and that gives them the body pain. And then the combination of the pain, the fatigue, the estrogen dominance, that ends up creating this milieu that we call fibromyalgia. There are some patients who have it because they're vitamin D deficient. Cheryl Hershey at OHSU has measured fibromyalgia patients. They have vitamin D levels of 7 or none detectable or 12. And you get their vitamin D levels up to 50 or 60 where they belong, and the fibromyalgia goes away. Well, then they still have to transition off of all the drugs they're on to like be able to have a life. There's another group that has full body pain because of basically food sensitivities. It's serum sickness. It's not IgE food allergies, you know, where you eat a peanut and you turn bright red and you fall over. Mm-hmm. It's macrophage-mediated food sensitivities. So the IgG antibodies have multiple sites for antigen to stick to. So let's say you're sensitive to gluten and you've got these IgG antibodies, and if you put your hand out in front of your face, you're going to see 5 fingers, and each one of those fingers has room to hook onto a little gluten peptide, and they stick to each other. So the IgG antibodies form circulating mats when they stick to each other and make little antigen antibody complexes. The macrophages are your kind of like your cleanup guys. Macrophages come along and hoover those up, vacuum those up. And the macrophages are not great at appetite control. So they eat as much as they can and then they explode. And they release histamine everywhere. Mm. Well, histamine stimulates class C pain fibers, which are the slow, multimodal, achy pain fibers. And the pain can get quite intense. And so that creates the pain. And you can develop these food sensitivities at the age of 20, 30, 40, any place in there. Once your body gets in pain, histamine stimulates alertness in the brain, which is why antihistamines make you sleepy. So histamine interferes with sleep. The histamine creates pain. And once you are sleep deprived and in pain, doesn't take but 3 to 4 months and you'll develop fibromyalgia. Mm. So the way to fix that group is to put them on an elimination diet, get them off of the most likely foods. I haven't found a decent lab with accurate test results. And so the 7 most common foods, you get them off of those with no cheating for 6 to 8 weeks. Body pain goes down. You treat them with microcurrent. You treat their gut. You treat the muscle pain. Quiet down the gut. Treat the liver. Treat the adrenals. And the studies that we had out of my clinic, takes about 4 months for fibromyalgia patients to recover. You get their pain down and the neuroendocrine system just rights itself.
Mm.
Their energy levels come back. They start getting tired at night instead of waking up at night. Their digestion improves. Their allergies kind of settle down. It's pretty extraordinary.
Yeah.
There's another group that gets immunized. So they get a flock of immunizations to go to China or Africa, and they are never well after that. There's another group that'll get a viral illness of some sort of retrovirus, and they have immune system compromises after that. There's 6 or 7 different ways, I think, in my textbook. It's frequency-specific microcurrent in pain management. In the textbook, there's a chapter on fibromyalgia, and those types and how you diagnose them and really how you treat them is included in that chapter in the textbook.
Mm, it's amazing. It's so helpful, you know, because I feel like it has been wrongly just dumped into the same basket for so long, which is why so many people struggle with it and don't know how to get out of it.
Yeah. And they're told it's unfixable. It's like, well, it is not a Prozac deficiency.
Right.
It is not an Advil deficiency. It's not a Celexa deficiency.
Right.
And it's like you have to be willing to look in the history and find out where it came from. So one patient that comes to mind, she was an accountant, a CPA, sole support of her family. She had 3 kids. Her husband was on disability. And so she was motivated to work. She lived out in Hood River, which is an agricultural area. And she had brain fog and body pain, and she'd gained 80 pounds. And she had fibromyalgia. She was a mess. And the history took an hour and a half. I kept looking for what would have caused it. No auto accidents, no food sensitivities that she knew about, or she was already on an elimination diet. I said, well, have you ever been exposed to organic chemicals or pesticides? No. And when did your symptoms start? 2000. Okay. Have you ever lived on or near a farm or near an orchard? And she said, well, yeah, we live in a house in the middle of an orchard.
Mm.
I said, is an organic orchard? Oh, no. The men come in moon suits twice a month and spray the trees. And they tell us to just stay inside for an hour or two and it will be fine. And I said, do you have city water or well water? We drink water from a well that's on the property.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
And when did you move into this house? 99. Her symptoms started in 2000 and she never associated the two because her onset was so gradual.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, you have to move. So we treated her for toxicity and her pain went down, but it wouldn't last because she kept going home. So she went on vacation, went to stay with an aunt for a month, took the husband and kids with her. She moved back. She got better. She moved back. She got sick again. They moved and she recovered and she was fine after that. But it comes from some place. It does not just land on you from space.
Mm-hmm.
It is not just central sensitization. It is not a Celexa deficiency. It's not a serotonin deficiency most of the time. Sometimes it is, but it's fixable.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gotten a little frustrated with the fibromyalgia community because they don't want it to be fixable. It's like they can't get their head around the concept that it comes from some place and that if you address the place that it comes from, you can fix it.
Right.
That is my contention. So yes, thank you for holding that vision.
Yes.
Yay.
And is there anything, just to wrap it up, I always like to ask all the smart people I get to talk to what they're currently fascinated by or working on in their own practice. So is there anything on your mind or in your practice these days?
Oh, what a great question. This has been the year of, it's been about a year of the relationship between the cerebellum, the spinal cord, and the neuromuscular system. Now, that's kind of a little obscure. It's also been the year of the visceral connection to myofascial pain. So this lady with the pelvic floor spasms and the man with the thoracic pain where it comes from kidney stones and the pelvic floor spasm where it came from the uterus, that's been like the last couple of years. But this last year, dealing with patients who have spinal cord, like myelopathies or spinal injuries, and basically rebuilt a peripheral area like the shoulder or the hip and the leg. You've changed all the scar tissue. You've changed the mechanics, and then the brain has to figure out how to get this region to function normally biomechanically, to have all the muscles fire in the right order. We found out working with a patient that had a shoulder fracture. So we worked on it for 8-9 months. It was my shoulder. The physical therapists I work with, the shoulder muscles have to fire in a certain order in order for the shoulder to move properly and in a coordinated fashion. And when we treated treated the shoulder, that wasn't doing anything. And I was out on the exercise floor and we had the microcurrent around my neck and around my upper arm. And we ran the frequency to increase secretions in the cerebellum. And the shoulder coordination mechanics completely changed in 10 seconds.
Wow.
It was crazy. It was like, did that just do what I think it did? And the PTAs that are watching me go, yes. So we exercised with that in play, that running for about 5 to 10 minutes. And so the muscle coordination was good, but it was still hard for me to find the muscle. Like she'd say, okay, now move this or contract that. It was hard to locate it. Well, there's a frequency for the sensory cortex. So I ran the frequency, being my own guinea pig, increased secretions in the sensory cortex. And in a way that is very difficult to describe, all of a sudden I could find my shoulder.
Mm.
I could find the muscles. So we started doing this with patients who are in rehab, increase secretions in the sensory cortex, have them move it and they can find it, then increase secretions in the cerebellum and the spinal cord and the nerve. And you can follow that whole train from the brain down to the extremity. So it's a pretty sophisticated level of practice. Like the average massage therapist will treat locally, treat the cord, treat the nerve, treat the fascia, treat the sarcomere, or treat the cause of the problem. But when you get to more elaborate RSD kinds of neurologic dysfunction or spinal cord injuries or brain injuries or a little more complex peripheral injuries, when you can manipulate the brain to connect with the periphery, it's a total game changer. It takes 8 months worth of work and compresses it to about an hour.
That's amazing.
It's just nuts.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for doing this work and bringing this work to the world and also for talking with all of us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Brooke. This was really fun. I hope you come back to a seminar sometime soon.
I very much look forward to it. Yes.
Okay, dear.
So big gratitude again to Dr. Carolyn McMakin for talking with all of us today. If you want to check out frequency-specific microcurrents some more, that website is frequencyspecific.com. And her textbook, again, is Frequency-Specific Microcurrent in Pain Management. The show notes for this episode, including some great videos of FSM in action and some great case studies and research, including the crazy mouse ear research, are at liberatedbody.com. And before we get into the home play, just a wee bit more information about the 30-day challenge at Liberated Body. If you've heard of a food cleanse or an elimination diet, which of course a lot of people are talking about these days as we get off the crazy train that is the holidays and head into New Year's resolution land. So this is kind of like a movement version of that, but more fun, less deprivation, and more good times. So the gist of it is that we're getting to know our own physical habits and patterns, learning good skills for just basic supportive biomechanics of our everyday movements, like standing, bending, walking, sitting. And of course, indulging in a super fun movement scavenger hunt, which some of you may have gotten a little taste of at the Facebook group recently. You can always check out more details at liberatedbody.com/30-day-challenge. And it all happens within a private Facebook group. So you're going through it with a group of really wonderful people. It's my personal favorite part about the challenge. I feel crazy lucky that I get to digitally hang out with some really amazing people every time I run a challenge. So it's going to be open for enrollment from December 29th through the 1st and then closed again until April. So I only run it a few times a year. And once the clock strikes midnight and it becomes January 2nd, it is closed. I don't do last minute because, you know, A, I want to hang out with the people who have actually signed up and not be distracted for them. And B, I don't want people to think I'm full of crap when I say things like, I'm not going to let people in after the deadline. So that's all that. On to this week's home play. I really just have a couple of videos to trip out on, and they're in the show notes. Neither are from FSM. Both come from me meandering around in videos on resonance. And one is from the Gentleman Physicist. Great name, which explains resonance in a really great, clear, concrete way. So you can watch it to just learn a good explanation of resonance. But also what's really cool is you get to see the effect of the right resonant frequency on glass. So you get to watch in slow motion a wine glass kind of bend and wobble and eventually explode, which is crazy. And another is of an artist who's creating these beautiful geometric images of water by using sound wave frequencies. So watching how the water organizes itself into these patterns with different frequencies is really beautiful. So watch it and remember that we're about 70% water. And speaking of water, there's a third that is just, it's another sound frequency experiment with water coming out of a hose. It's crazy. It's like crazy magic. So these are just things to kind of watch and meditate a little bit on us as electromagnetic beings and as resonant beings and how resonance might affect us. And that's it for home play this week. I am very grateful to Mary Slater, Jen Mulholland, Johnson Yusuf Zadeh, I hope I didn't butcher your last name, and Beth Posa for your very kind and lovely emails. And you can always find me at brooke@liberatedbody.com. There's an E on the end of my name. And on iTunes, I'm really grateful to Wannabe Bodhisattva and Elise Gibney for your very generous and kind reviews. And hey now, if you ever feel moved to leave a review, that would be just truly fantastic as it helps other people to find this show. So I will be back in a couple of weeks to kick off 2015 with some exceptional body nerd delights. And so until then, please enjoy celebrating the holiday season. A very happy new year to all of you, and keep on making the world a more embodied place.